Hi, Carrie. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's been a great day.
Tell me about your organization, what it does, and how long it's been around.
We started in 2003 when the government was going to allow grass-fed to be labeled when it was 20% fed 20% grain, given antibiotics, given hormones, and confined. So we started the grass-fed association to say, no, grass-fed has to mean grass-fed. Animals on pasture, no antibiotics and no hormones, and no confinement. So we've been around since 2003. We had the first certified standards for grass-fed ruminants. That's beef, bison, sheep, and goats. And then we also have pastured pork standards, so that when you buy a product that has our seal on it, you know that animal's been out on pasture. And we also have dairy. And so we have two programs that are using our seal for 100% grass-fed dairy.
For somebody shopping in the grocery store, and there's so many labels now, what are the standards that the if they see the American Grass-Fed Association on that, what are some of the standards that your producers have to follow?
They have to have a 100% forage-based diet, which means they can. There are areas of the country that don't have green grass year-round, so they're silage, haylage, baleage, things that are forage, but they're not grains. There are no cereal grains at all are allowed to be fed. So that's one thing. The other is that no antibiotics. We don't say don't treat sick animals, but if you treat an animal that's ill, you have to take it out of the program. And the reason we did that is the marketing people we've talked to said we can't figure out how to say that there was an animal that was sick, and now it's well enough for you to eat. So it's just easier. No added hormones and no confinement. The animals are allowed to be confined, to be worked, to be rounded up, to be checked, and that kind of thing, to be moved, but only for a certain number of days a year. So there's no confinement feeding on our program. There's good animal welfare. There's some regenerative practices in our standards. And we represent farmers who have as little as 10 animals, and we represent farmers who have as many as 10,000 animals. So it's across the spectrum. So when they see the seal on a package at a grocery store or in the farmer's market or online, a lot of our farmers sell online, and it has our seal, then you know those standards are met. We inspect the farms every 15 months, and the reason we do it every 15 months instead of every 12 months is we see the farm at different times of the year. That's pretty much it. With the pastured pork, it's more of the way the animal is raised than the way what it's fed. They're not allowed to be fed any GMO grains. And then, again, no antibiotics, no hormones. With dairy, the same thing, 100% grass-fed. And they're allowed to be supplemented a little bit more because the mama is also giving part of herself to you. And so we need to keep her healthy to produce good milk. But they still can't have cereal grains, which is what makes ruminants sick.
So let's talk about grains for a minute. What is the problem with feeding ruminants grain, or why is this a concern that your organization is so focused on?
Well, ruminant animals, they don't have four stomachs, they have a four-chambered stomach. So they take cellulose, which is grass, and they turn it into energy. We can't do that. When you feed them cereal grains, which is corn and soy and other things, it makes them sick because they can't digest it. So then you have to give them something to make them not acidic in their gut. Then it makes them sick, get abscesses and that kind of thing. So we don't want to eat sick animals. So that's why we don't feed ruminants, cattle, bison, sheep, and goats. That's why we don't feed them cereal grains, because it makes them sick. And that's why.
Why does organization like yours exist? Are there not federal standards that look into this kind of thing?
No. In 2007, the government came out with a standard or a definition for grass-fed, and they used it up until about 2013, and it basically said forage-based diet, but they didn't address antibiotics, it didn't address hormones, it didn't address confinement. And then big business all of a sudden realized that grass-fed was becoming popular. And when the big guys came in with their grass-fed labels, the government said, well, we can no longer enforce that. We don't have the right to enforce that. So we are still supporting the farmer who's doing 100% grass-fed, because you see a lot of grass-fed in the marketplace with labels on it that are meaningless. It's all done by affidavit. It's all paperwork. They never see the farm. They never talk to the farmers. It's just sent through the system. So that's why we're still in existence. The other thing that we're fighting right now is offshore, because right now with product of the USA, you can bring meat in from offshore and repackage it in any way, and all of a sudden you can label it product of the USA if it's repackaged. So you're fighting a market that you don't know how that animal was raised and how it got here. So that's why we do what we do.
How do these standards impact a customer? Like, what can they expect to get? If they're probably going to pay more for a product with your label. So what are they getting in terms of flavor and also maybe broader environmental impact?
Well, if you put animals back on pasture, the animals impacting the earth make the earth better. And the people say take animals off the earth and it'll be better. Well, no, the animals have a place on the earth to impact it. They're eating native grasses. There are areas in this country that can't support row crop vegetables and such to grow. So, yes, it will cost a little bit more, but it's not subsidized anyway. Cheap food is cheap food because it's being subsidized by somebody, and it's not really cheap. The environmental costs that we have for confinement feeding operations and that kind of thing with runoff, sick animals, trucking in inputs and all that stuff, that doesn't happen with a pasture-based production system. And these farmers don't get any subsidy from the government, none whatsoever. So that's why it's going to cost you a little more. It's healthier. It takes longer to raise. These animals are probably 18 to 20 months. And when you get an animal that's confined fed, it's probably 14 to 16 months. So, it's quite a substantial long. They have to hold the animal longer, which costs more money.
So it's an investment in the environment and in future farmers.
Absolutely. You know, and these farmers are, many of them are small. They're hanging on to their land. They don't want to have the environmental impact that some of these larger operations have. They don't want to use the antibiotics that go back into the earth. They don't want to use the hormones. They don't want to do all of those things. They don't want to degrade the earth. They want to make the earth better because this is the only one we got.
Speaking of the future, I guess I have two questions. I'll break them into two parts. One, I want to just talk about the transition of farmland and how practices like using grass-fed are impacting rural communities, and also what the impact of the grass-fed and pasture-based systems are on climate change.
As far as pasture-based systems on rural economies, is that when you have healthy animal production in rural economies, well, let's take the opposite approach. When you have large confinement feeding operations, you don't need a lot of people to manage that. And when you have a lot of small family farms that are supporting rural economies, supporting the local schools, supporting the local merchants, and supporting those kinds of things, then that puts more money back into those rural economies and keeps those rural economies alive. When you take all of those families off the farm, take the whole passion out of rural America. You don't have places where people live. You have places where people sleep, and they just go to instead of making those things work. And as far as the other question, remind me. Oh, as far as climate change, if you have animals on pasture, then the carbon that is sequestered, that was put back in the soil because the grasses are there, that's not bare ground. You don't have big manure lagoons. You don't have all of those things degrading the earth. So all of those things create a total system. And for that, in talking to some of the farmers, then they can give you a better idea of that. But it impacts the amount of carbon sequestration. So a really good pasture-based system will sequester enough carbon to offset any carbon that they're manufacturing on the farm. And they're keeping open space open instead of just, bare ground.
So folks are interested in learning more about grass-fed or maybe attending a conference or something like that to learn more. Where can they find more information about the American Grass-Fed Association and regenerative agriculture in general?
Well, we partnered 2 years ago with Guevara and with HMI to do this one big conference so that people don't have to go lots of places. On our website, we list a lot of conferences for your geographic region. And if we know about a conference, we put it on our calendar so you can see that. We're starting some webinars. We're starting some podcasts. We're starting those series right now. We just got a wonderful new media person. Our website is very interactive. Calling the organization, emailing the organization, tweeting the organization, whatever. We're getting into the social media aspect of it. As far as conferences, a lot of land-grant universities have wonderful conferences and that kind of thing. But just between Quivera, Holistic Management International, AGF, you go to our websites, or if you follow us on social media, you'll find out about conferences. And a lot of them we're trying to do, we have consumer-based conferences. We have conferences with chefs. We have conferences with slow food in the United States. In Denver this summer, they have a big consumer fair. It's called Slow Food Nations, and we bring a lot of people who really want to learn, and they're consumers. They're not farmers, but they come to meet the farmers.
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's always an honor.